Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's the 17th of April, 2013. Welcome to another show. I have a number of stories lined up here for you today. And leading the pack is the aftermath of the marathon bombing in Boston, Massachusetts. A lot of fallout and eyewitnesses' reports suggesting that there were drills taking place immediately prior to the bombing, with bomb-sniffing dogs present on the scene. The bombing has been dominating the news, probably in all Western countries. I can certainly say it dominated the Australian news for at least 24 hours. Pretty amazing, considering it was on a global scale, a very, very minor event. But as we've seen in the past, any terrorism act that is conducted in a Western country, that would be a country that is part of either the European bloc, North America, or Australia, tends to be given undue attention. In comparison, for example, to the coverage that would be given to a mass killing in Pakistan by US drones. That generally never gets even on the front page of any newspaper, and it's barely reported on. But anyway, let's just cover a few aspects of this story. We've got an eyewitness saying that the authorities must have known about the bombing. Now, the person concerned was actually one of the runners, and he actually said that he saw spotters on the roof for a drill which was taking place before the explosions at the Boston Marathon. Now, the police have refused to acknowledge that they had any warning of the bombing attack. However, it is curious that there were bomb-sniffing dogs present, and there were actual statements made by police to stay calm. And this was even as the bombs were exploding. There were statements being made by the police that people should stay calm as loudspeakers announced a bomb drill. So this is really quite a typical scenario that we've seen in the past, where terrorism acts seem to coincide with drill operations. And why is this? Why does this happen? I think the answer to that is not as simple as some people might like to think. It's not simply a case of they set up the drill to distract people from the real event, whereas that has been suggested on September 11 that did actually take place, that there were fake radar dots on the screens of the air traffic controllers, which was actually as a decoy to distract from the really real hijacked planes. Now, I actually think that the real case here, though, in many cases, is that what we have is an operation which is meant to be an exercise that somehow goes live when either it wasn't intended to or those participating in it didn't fully expect it to. But we have to understand that the way global counterterrorism operations work is that they are constantly doing exercises, and quite often the exercises that they engage in involve very realistic scenarios, and they often employ people who are from the general public to participate in these scenarios. Sometimes these scenarios are somehow a grey area between actual training exercises and actual intelligence gathering exercises, and sometimes they're part of sting operations, because we've seen many cases where a terrorist act has actually been fomented and funded by the FBI, only to then capture the person who's actually planting the bomb at the very last moment. And one has to consider the possibility that in many such cases they could perhaps catch the person a little too late, or the person who they've selected as the patsy in the sting operation could deviate from the plan. I mean, in some cases, they've actually given these patsies disabled bombs so that they can't actually explode them, or they've given them a package that they said contains a bomb, but it doesn't actually contain a bomb. But in reality, people can easily deviate from any plan that they've been told to do. So the bomb that maybe should have been planted wasn't, maybe something that was in there that shouldn't have been in there. There's possibilities are endless. But I think that... of course, we've seen a photograph of the pressure cooker that the bomb was allegedly placed in. So someone stuffed some explosives into a pressure cooker. Anyway, I won't belabor the point of this Boston Marathon bombing other than to say that it follows this pattern. A lot of people are talking about it on the blogosphere, and it will certainly ratchet up the heat in terms of government response. We'll have governments around the world saying, what can we now do? How can we prevent this type of act occurring in the future? And that they might come up with new ideas of how we might prevent a similar type of tragedy. And I can just well imagine calls for body scanners to be in place at major public events, although it'd be quite... a hilarious proposition if they were going to suggest that body scanners would be used at a marathon running event. But then again, look, anything's possible. You know, they may require anyone in the front row of the audience to go through some kind of scan. It doesn't really, you know, they can think of almost anything. It will be a token act. It will be a piece of security theatre, but it will also be a piece of legislation which clamps down on your rights and your freedoms. And that's my main concern. And whether there's a conspiracy behind this or not, whether it is in fact just a homegrown nutter or not, it really doesn't matter. And we can't know that. We're not going to be able to find out. However, what is clear is that this event is being used to heat up the discussion on terrorism, and particularly in relation to Australian issues and Australian concerns. I have an article here from the ABC. Australia is a target for ideological terrorist attacks. Now, this article also has an interview associated with it with Australia's new ambassador for counter-terrorism. His name is Bill Fisher.
Australia's new counter-terrorism ambassador, Bill Fisher, says Australia is still a significant target for terrorists motivated by ideology simply because we are a liberal Western country. In an interview conducted before today's events in Boston, Bill Fisher told our defence and national security correspondent, Michael Brissenden, that the intelligence community is increasingly concerned about the targeting of Australians and Australian companies overseas.
In the last few years, terrorism as an issue has faded a little from the public consciousness. That in itself is a mark of the success of the global counter-terrorism infrastructure that was obviously strengthened considerably after 9/11.
I'd just like to pause there for a bit of commentary. The claim that we are now free of terrorism in Australia and around the world, largely because of the response to 9/11, it's really important to deconstruct this. Okay, it's a completely false statement. The idea that somehow that ASIO, for example, protected us and stopped terrorism from occurring is ludicrous, and that is not. You know, that may be the wish. That always the wish of crime prevention is that you can stop it before it occurs, and maybe in some rare cases you can intercept a conspiracy early on if you have the. The people on the ground, the wiretapping and all the things that you might do to accomplish that. But you cannot prevent acts of terror generally, because it's very easy to carry out an act of terror. And a person can do it without really having any links to any organisations that would be monitored by the surveillance apparatus. It's actually it's deceptive and wrong and quite sinister that they try to pitch this idea that this giant security apparatus, which has increased dramatically. I mean, the size of the ASIO building is now just this monstrous building in Canberra. And, of course, all around the world we've seen it, particularly in America, the number of people employed in intelligence and security went up, you know, astronomically in the years following 9/11. And, of course, they're justifying all that and they're saying, well, look how we've protected you from terrorism. But it's ludicrous. I mean, if someone had a grudge and they wanted to do something, there are so many different ways that they could do it. There are so many different places where people gather in public in large numbers, and there are so many easy ways of putting together some sort of device, bomb, poison, gas. You know, it's just endless, really, when you think about it, that the idea that these organizations can protect us from that is something that just needs to be shot down. And unfortunately, there was no one in the mainstream media going to do that. So here I am belaboring this point. Anyway, we'll just continue here with the interview from ABC Radio.
In Australia, in the years since the attacks in 2001, and in response to the Bali bombings, our own intelligence community has more than doubled in size. In 2003, Australia created the post of Ambassador for Counter-Terrorism to assist in coordinating international counter-terrorism efforts. Earlier this year, the post was filled by Bill Fisher, one of Australia's most experienced diplomats. In a wide-ranging interview in his office in the Foreign Affairs Building in Canberra late last week, Mr. Fisher maintained that considerable progress had been made in the fight against terrorism over the past few years, but stressed the threat was always present.
You know, we're always at the 10th of September, in that just as generals are always being told not to fight the last war, people in the counter-terrorist world need to be reminded not to prepare for the last attack, because each one is likely to be different.
And while the focus on domestic terrorism is intense, and particular concern has been raised in the past few days about the number of young Lebanese-Australian men returning to Australia who've been fighting in Syria alongside Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, Mr. Fisher says the other continuing focus for the Australian counter-terrorism community is Australians working and travelling overseas. Australian resource companies operating in North Africa are especially vulnerable. There are currently some 260 Australian companies working in Africa, many of them small, prospecting outfits, and many of them are working across sensitive areas in northwest and northeast Africa.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. During the interview there, it was mentioned that there is concern about Syrians and particularly Lebanese people from Australia heading over to Syria. And I do have another article about that, which I will get up for you in the next segment. I have it here. Spy agencies are monitoring Australians who are fighting in Syria. And this is another story from the ABC. The head of Australia's domestic intelligence agency has confirmed investigations into hundreds of young Australian Lebanese men who have joined the fighting in Syria. I'm going to discuss that in more detail in the next segment. Please do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. It's great to be talking to you today. We'll be right back after this break. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is there.
day, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life, throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Please check out our website if you get a chance at truthnews.com.au. All our podcasts are posted up on there. And, of course, our podcasts are also available from the Logos Radio Network, and you can find all the links to that and to the streaming version of our show from truthnews.com.au. Now, I was talking there in the previous segment about, firstly, the Boston attacks and some responses from Australian intelligence representatives. Particularly the Australian ambassador, rather vainglorious term, isn't it? Australian ambassador for counterterrorism, Bill Fisher. And they're taking credit for nothing, really, just taking credit for the fact that we haven't really had any terrorist attacks in Australia. And, you know, that's all because of this amazing apparatus that we've got of the spy agencies, which have vastly increased their size. And I actually have another story here from the ABC. Spy agencies are monitoring Australians fighting in Syria. The head of Australia's domestic intelligence agency has confirmed investigations into hundreds of Australian and Lebanese men who have joined the fighting in Syria. ASIO director David Irvine says the fear is that young men are becoming radicalised by their experiences and they may present a future terrorism risk once they return to Australia. He says here, and this is a direct quote, we continue to be concerned about young Australians going overseas to fight on battlefields that don't necessarily have a lot to do with Australia. Now, this is one subject that sort of ties in the concerns that I was raising earlier about who is actually behind global terrorism with the ongoing geopolitical warmongering activities that are being engaged in by the world's superpowers, which is really a form of terrorism in itself. It is the ultimate form of terrorism. War is the ultimate form of terrorism. Now, what we've seen in Syria, by any conservative analysis, is a destabilization of another country. And we've seen it methodically done. We've seen it, the strategy, we've seen the motive, being that Syria is a very close ally of both Russia and Iran and in a very important strategic position. The Anglo-American Empire would like Syria to have a more friendly regime, and they would like to further destabilize Iran by taking away a friendly regime from Iran. And so they have been doing what they always do, and this goes back decade after decade after decade to the end of the Second World War. They're trying to overthrow the regime by fomenting trouble. And Australia has been an integral part of that. We expelled the Syrian ambassador last year sometime, and we have continually applauded the acts of the rebels who are committing gross human rights violations. And we've completely downplayed the fact that the president of Syria has vast support with his people, and that the vast majority of Syrians, according to any objective view, would like to keep the president. They may have some concerns about improving democracy, and nobody unequivocally loves their government. People have criticisms, of course, but none of them that I've spoken to in terms of groups that I visited, and I've participated in large protests in Sydney, Australia. On the whole, they do not think that the Syrian government is doing a bad job, and think it's vastly preferable to what this what these absolutely despicable rebel forces have been doing. Is vastly preferable to that. So Australia, in endorsing this regime, this alternate regime, this rebel, various rebel forces who are composed of Islamic extremists and an assortment of foreign mercenaries, Australia in supporting those has directly contributed to a problem. in Syria. And now we see these representatives from ASIO saying that they're concerned, as if they're surprised, that we have people from Australia of Syrian or Lebanese background traveling over there to participate and to maybe stand up for what they believe in. It's just so hypocritical, ladies and gentlemen. It is so offensive to the mind, to the heart. It is so wrong. I don't know what we can do about it. There are so many things wrong with our country. It is really just hard to know where to begin. I'm going to play a little clip here from the ABC article, a spy agency is monitoring Australians fighting in Syria, and it contains some footage. If you follow our show notes, you'll be able to see the footage of the massive ASIO new building that they're constructing in Canberra, just opposite the lake there. And that's an indication of where we're headed, ladies and gentlemen, with the security apparatus superstate that we are migrating towards in this country.
Australia's security services say they're closely watching the local fallout from the civil war in Syria. ASIO has confirmed it's investigating hundreds of young Australian-Lebanese men who've gone to fight in Syria. As Michael Brissenden reports, they're among the many potential terrorist threats ASIO will monitor from its new $630 million headquarters here in Canberra.
As secret buildings go, they don't get much more visible than this, at least on the outside. But today we were given what is, for anyone other than spooks, the first and possibly the last glimpse inside the new ASIO head office. The ASIO headquarters will house up to 1,800 staff. At this stage, still empty. Some of it looks just like any other office. There are open plan workspaces and an auditorium, or perhaps a huge cone of silence.
And it goes without saying that it has levels of security that no other auditorium is able to provide.
I hope so. Definitely.
Further into the heart of the building is a 24-hour operations hub that, when up and running, would be the nerve centre of any response to a terror attack or any operational crisis that had a security implication. The central hub has its own water, sewerage and electricity supply, fuelled by a 600,000-litre diesel tank. It could operate independently off the grid for 3 days. This building has become something of a metaphor for the unchecked growth of the Australian intelligence community since 9/11. And while some would argue that the security environment has changed considerably, Australia's intelligence chiefs say the threat is as real as ever.
We are still conducting as many investigations into possible terrorism in Australia today as we were 4 years ago or 5 years ago.
Now, let me just pause it there to remind our listeners that, in fact, yes, the Australian Federal Police have made a number of high-profile arrests of terrorist groups in Australia. And at some stage, I'm going to gather all that information back together. I've already discussed it on this show in the past. But in virtually every case, and this exactly represents the MO that the FBI follows in the US, almost in every case, these terrorist conspiracies were conceived or helped along by the covert police themselves. And in many cases, they actually give money to the conspirators and they actually talk them into it. They actually talk them through it. They propose targets. They discuss how you might blow something up. It is, and quite often the people who are engaged to do this are mentally deficient or psychotic people from the very fringes of society who have been selected to basically participate in this mock crime, this mock-up of a crime. And in fact, it's never even intended to take place, and they're doing it as part of a high-profile bust. But as I said earlier, quite often these types of situations can go awry, and this is why it really has to be stamped out, ladies and gentlemen, because quite often these high-profile arrests that are going to make the police look really good, they might go the wrong way, and one of the patsies that they've selected might deviate from the plan and actually go and get his own explosives and blow something up when he's not meant to. I'm just suggesting here as a possibility, but the fact is that they do this. They do this regularly. They even admit it. It's not hidden. It's in the public domain. It has to be stamped out. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be talking to you today, and I'll be right back after this break with more news and analysis.
Thank you. after man is so unjust. Children, yeah, don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm discussing here some stories related to terrorism and the intelligence community monitoring Australians who may be going overseas to fight. And I'm just going to continue here playing some of the video clip from ABC News.
And one of the biggest concerns at the moment is the number of young Australian Lebanese men currently fighting in Syria. The ASIO Director General says the figure is in the hundreds.
People that particularly are of concern are young Australians with a deep commitment to the extremist cause who are going over either to fight or to support the fighting in some other way.
Some of these Australians, regrettably, are going to assist or work with or join organisations, terrorist organisations, that are proscribed in Australia. That's against Australian law.
The ABC understands many of them were born in Australia but come from immigrant families from the northern Lebanon region around Tripoli.
Now, what's interesting about this, ladies and gentlemen, is that, as he says here, that these are illegal organisations, potentially terrorist organisations, and yet, well, who are these organisations really? Because aren't these the so-called rebel forces in Syria? I mean, it's not the Syrian government. They're not actually saying here that the people are going overseas to support the Syrian government. So that's actually a tacit acknowledgement that the forces that are operating in Syria to topple the regime there are actually composed of organisations that are considered to be illegal terrorist organisations by the international intelligence community. And yet they are the groups that our government is supporting against the government of Syria. Now go figure that one out. Like, it's just right in your face, right out in the open, a complete paradox, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think when you actually analyse the policies of governments, the foreign policies and the activities of various organisations within government that are involved in, say, crime fighting and intelligence gathering, all operating semi-independently, what you actually often do see is such paradoxes, such contradictions. And it's a symptom, I believe, of the evolving tyranny. Tyranny is not actually a state of organisation. People tend to think tyranny is a very ordered state where everything's controlled from the top down and everything works perfectly. No, tyranny is the opposite of that. Tyranny is actually one of the most disorganised, poorly managed types of social organisation, which only thrives by power and force, whereas a true democracy, cohesive, voluntarist organisations of people working together, of course, are very, very, very well organised and do not involve violence in order to effect change or to conduct their daily activities. So I just think that's a very interesting point to note, is that, in fact, the chaos and confusion that we see is actually a symptom of evolving totalitarianism. Now, I've got another story here in relation to the Boston bombings, and again from the ABC. I'm doing a tour de force here of the ABC News, but it does actually sometimes give us an interesting window on what the powers that be are thinking. And I have a security expert here talking about homegrown US militants.
David Mallett was the founding director of Colorado State University's Center of Homeland Security. He now lectures in international relations with the University of Melbourne, and he joins me now live from Melbourne. David Mallett, good morning. Do you think the FBI probably already has a pretty good idea of who might be responsible and is playing its cards pretty close to its chest?
The FBI is probably playing its cards very close to its chest if it's worried about tipping off a domestic terror group. There's always the possibility that this is Al-Qaeda or someone affiliated with Al-Qaeda, but there are so many parallels, in my view, to previous domestic U.S. terror attacks from the date of mid-April, which coincides with Tax Day and with the American Revolution, which means a lot to these groups, to the fact this attack was somewhat similar to the bombing at the Atlanta Olympic Games bombings in 1996, which also used ball bearings and a small improvised explosive device. I would guess if the FBI is being cautious, they're looking for a suspect close to home.
Yeah. Just take us through that history of homegrown terrorism in the U.S. and the intensity of feelings in the U.S. about things like rights to privacy and rights to own guns and things like that, because it's kind of a bit of a foreign concept to the people of Australia.
Okay, I think it's interesting to note here that the ABC is framing this in a particular way. And bear in mind, the ABC are masters of this. They're basically portraying Australia as a country that doesn't know anything about these extremist fringe elements in America, people who want to have access to guns, people who are concerned about their rights. Oh, no, we don't know anything about that. We're just this country on the other side of the world, and we're just, you know, we'll just follow the laws, and we're all normal here. We don't have extremist fringe elements like you have, so please tell us all about it. Anyway, it's ludicrous, but it's part of the psyop of the way the ABC frames its stories. Anyway, just continuing here with the coverage.
It's really a fringe element within the United States as well, but every time you have a Democratic president like Barack Obama is elected, the number of militia groups, you know, the groups that say they need to arm themselves to defend against federal government increases. When Obama became president, famously, bullets sold out across America. You couldn't buy them because they're in such demand by groups like this. The number of hate groups, sort of activist, racist, violent groups, has quadrupled since Obama became president. And a lot of these groups are quite upset about gun control legislation that's being proposed right now. There was word just a few hours ago that there was a U.S. senator who had received ricin, which is basically a biological weapon made from castor bean oil extract, in the mail. And some of the extremist groups have mailed ricin to federal judges and the like in the past, so there could be some connection to this attack.
Okay, now it seems like this chap here, David Mallett, is also a bit of a clown. He's suggesting that the groups who support gun ownership rights, which is part of the Constitution of the United States, it's very much a mainstream thing, ladies and gentlemen. It is not a fringe thing. It is actually intrinsic to the Constitution of the United States. He's suggesting that some disgruntled people who believe in gun rights would have set off a bomb, a pressure cooker packed with ball bearings at a running event. Why on earth would someone do that if they're part of the constitutional movement supporting gun rights? It is so ludicrous. It is so obscene. It is really offensive. And he offers no evidence for it. It's just a bald assertion. It is really incredibly offensive. I have to say, this man really takes the cake in terms of being a liar, someone stirring the pot of resentment and anger in the community, someone falsely accusing groups who really should not be considered to be part of any kind of criminal terrorist group, and are not. These are just vague assertions that actually have no connection to any facts on the ground. This is pure propaganda, internal propaganda for swaying the opinion of people, and again, it is part of a very, very sinister trend in our Western democracies. Continuing here from the interview.
It just seems like a lot of signs would point to groups on the far right being aggrieved right now and finding a good target of opportunity. It's very hard to secure an entire marathon route.
Are there any particular outlawed groups that the FBI would be taking a very close look at?
You have sort of standing groups like the Ku Klux Klan and Aryan Nations that are still active. I would suspect that this would be a lone wolf, an individual extremist, or perhaps a small group of one or two, like the Oklahoma City bombing was in 1995, like the Atlanta Olympics bombing was in 1996. There was apparently no chatter, as they call it, intercepted between militant groups. This is what makes it so dangerous and unpredictable. Even if they can't launch large-scale attacks because they have no one to coordinate with, there's no way to monitor them. So I'm thinking they'd probably be looking for isolated individuals.
Okay, let me just comment on that. Now, he's basically acknowledging there that this is not the type of act that would be committed by a group. And obviously that is correct, although that is the way it's been projected so far, and it's certainly the way the headlines read, homegrown U.S. militants. And that's the actual headline here on the article from the ABC, security expert on homegrown US militants. So we're expected to believe, and if we just read the headlines, we're going to think, oh, it's these groups of militants are setting off pressure cookers full of ball bearings at running events. That's what they do, these groups of militants, right? Whereas, in fact, it's probably just one or two people. But then again, as we've seen so many times before, this one or two people will probably have connections with the FBI. Timothy McVeigh definitely did. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great being with you today. I'm really enjoying going through all this information. I'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton, and do check us out on the internet. Check out our blogs, check out our podcasts. If you've got a smartphone, you can subscribe to them using one of the many apps that you can get, and you'll be getting our podcast on a regular basis to your phone. Now, I've been going through some stories in relation to the Boston bombing and discussions on Australian media about the security situation and the expansion of ASIO. And then we've moved into another discussion here from the ABC with a security expert from the United States. And they're talking here about homegrown militants. And the man, David Mallett, was basically saying that this act has been carried out by people who are aggrieved with the government, whatever that means. I mean, that's such a vast topic, isn't it? There's so many things that you could be aggrieved with the government about. But he's trying to frame this. He's basically saying those people who are concerned about gun rights, privacy, personal liberties, and I guess the Constitution, because the gun rights debate is firmly grounded in the US Constitution. He's basically saying that these are the types of people that would commit this heinous act, filling a container full of ball bearings and blowing it up at an event just full of civilians, just ordinary people out for a run. I mean, what a ludicrous assertion. There is no connection there. There is no motive. There is no logic. That is not the sort of thing that a group who is opposed on constitutional grounds to the seizure of guns would do. But then during the interview, he kind of modifies his position a little bit, and he says, well, actually, you know what, it's not really a group. It's more likely to be the lone wolf. And then he even makes a comparison to the Oklahoma bombing. And as I said earlier, yes, the Oklahoma bombing was carried out by a lone wolf-type individual, but Timothy McVeigh had proven connections with the FBI. And so, again, it's the same paradigm, it's the same modus operandi. It's a very sick situation, ladies and gentlemen, with the governments that we have feeding on themselves, creating crime so that they can then stamp out crime. It's corrupt, it's tyrannical. And anyway, I'm going to continue with the interview here with security expert David Mallett.
Wouldn't the experience of the Timothy McVeigh incident in the US have kind of warned people away, if they had similar tendencies, warned them away from going down the same path because of what happened to him, or is he seen as a bit of a hero?
I'm not aware of him being particularly venerated except by these radical right groups. The number of militia activities did sort of drop after Oklahoma City bombing as people began to associate them with unacceptable behavior.
Yeah.
That might happen again. now, but the militias had pretty much died out by the end of George W. Bush's second term, but when Obama became president, they really sprang back to life.
Yeah. Now, there was an appeal this morning from the FBI agent there for anyone with public information, any member of the public with information to come forward. It seems that we kind of hear that after regular kind of criminal acts in Australia as well. But the video evidence in this will be critical.
Yeah, one would hope they can get good video evidence. I'm a bit worried that in a crowd of thousands and thousands of people, it would be hard to get an image of an individual leaving a backpack on the ground. But public tips are so important. That's the Unabomber, who was somebody who left packaged explosives around for almost 17 years, was finally turned in because his brother recognized some of his writings that were published. So public input is certainly critical in cases like this.
And what do you make of that media conference this morning in terms of the evidence that they've found so far that is suggesting that it was possibly a pressure cooker that contained ball bearings and fragments of different things?
Well, as far as I know, the pressure cooker is a new element that would have increased the force of the explosive, distributed the shrapnel further. But the use of ball bearings and nails, that's something you find all over the world. If anything, it says that there's nothing uniquely American about this attack. It could have been anybody.
Okay, we'll just leave it there. I don't think we're going to get anything of more of value from that interview. But it is very clear that what the media is doing in this case, and I'm sure this is happening around the world, I'm sure it's happening intensively in US media, is that they are drawing a connection between people who basically believe in rights and freedoms, and particularly those that are enshrined in the US Constitution, with the perpetrators of a heinous act that involved killing people randomly who were just out for a run. And there is no evidence for that. They haven't even got any evidence. They're just making a bald assertion. And that is extremely sinister. That is extremely wicked that this man is doing it. And, you know, do not minimize its importance. Do not minimize its significance. The ABC, of course, holds incredible weight in Australia. It is one of the dominant media voices in Australia. And this idea that people who stand up for their rights, people who believe in privacy, people who are concerned about government having too much power, are somehow connected to evil acts is just out there. It is just so, so wicked, ladies and gentlemen. It must be confronted. And I do encourage, you know, that you bring this up, talk about it. Don't allow the propaganda simply to wash over you. This is what tends to happen, is we let the propaganda wash over us and we don't do anything about it. It needs to be counteracted. You need to tell 10 people today the reality that we're being lied to. 10 people. You need to actually have those discussions. It's a minimal effort that you need to do to basically counteract the massive propaganda resources that are being put into creating a scenario in people's minds where anyone who stands up for their rights is associated with an evil act, an act of murder. Anyway, I'd like to move on now with some other stories from Australia. An interesting one to look at is in relation to the carbon tax. And I have an article here. The plunging carbon tax is going to affect the Australian budget. And this is a really interesting story, and I'll be covering this in more detail when we come back from the break in hour two. But just reading here from the ABC article, plunging carbon price to hit budget. The federal opposition says a potential multi-billion dollar hit to the budget following a plunge in Europe's carbon price has put future tax cuts and pension rises at risk. The government's carbon package includes compensation for pensioners and low to middle income households and a second round of tax cuts in 2015-16. Opposition Treasury spokesman Joe Hockey says the slump in the carbon price in Europe, which is the world's largest carbon market, will have a costly impact on Australia's carbon market. And I do actually have a clip here from The World Today, and I'm going to give you a little taste of that.
But first, the European Union's decision not to bolster the world's biggest carbon market has sent the price through the floor and forced a revision of Australia's carbon revenue forecasts. The federal government says it will now revise down its budget forecasts for the carbon price, and that will push revenue down as well. The coalition is calling for the government to immediately abandon the tax, saying it's blowing a huge hole in the federal budget. But the climate change minister, Greg Combe, says it's still 2 years before Australia's scheme moves to a floating price linked to Europe, and that the EU is looking at ways to address the crisis. Chief political correspondent Sabra Lane reports.
The European Parliament's been discussing a plan to intervene into the EU carbon trading market to reduce the number of permits for sale to push up its price. The scheme is the biggest in the world, and it hasn't recovered since the global financial crisis. Back in 2008, carbon permits were selling for €25 a tonne. That slipped to €7 last year, and overnight it dropped to €2.60 before recovering slightly.
Just pause it there for a bit of commentary. Now, they said that the European regulators would like to intervene to reduce the number of permits to push up the price. Now, I mean, that was just delivered without any real analysis of what that would actually mean. I mean, that is a complete undermining of the free market concept on which carbon trading is supposedly based. You can't just intervene to reduce the number of permits without, it completely defeats what the purpose of the free carbon market allegedly was, which I think was completely duplicitous in its essence anyway. And I can talk at length as to why that is the case. But the idea that they would then intervene, it again, it's just incredible, isn't it, that there is this disconnect between the way people talk about a situation, the way they frame it, and what they actually do, when their actual actions really show that this is nothing about a free market. This is nothing about, the word free should never be included in any of these discussions. This is about people wanting to control, control, control. Back to the World Today coverage.
The EU carbon price is now valued at around $4 Australian a tonne, but the Australian carbon price is currently $23 a tonne. It'll go up this July to $24.15 and will increase again in July next year before moving to a floating price in mid-2015 when it becomes an emissions trading scheme and it becomes linked to the European scheme. Treasury had forecast the international price at that time would be between $29 and $61 a tonne. The Treasurer, Wayne Swan.
We'll examine that in the context of preparing all of our forecasts for the budget. We always go back and look at the assumptions that underpin those forecasts, and we'll do that in the usual way.
So Greg Combo's already forecast downgrades in the budget. How much will they be?
Well, what I've said is that we'll look at all of our assumptions and forecasts in the budget, and we'll do that in the normal way.
All right, we're just about to go to break. We'll be back for the second hour of the show. Do stay with us. I'll be continuing with this coverage of the carbon price and the correlates that are affecting it in Europe. A very interesting topic, actually. So do stay with us. I'll be back for the full hour. You're with Truth News, Radio Australia. Don't go away.